Hello, this is Spencer Main. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast.
Well, thank you for tuning in. How many of you liked to shoot different types of guns and test different types of guns? I bet the answer is most of you. Now, you've heard me mention many times on this podcast that I believe in standardizing your carry gun. In other words, standardizing the type, the brand, and things like that for various reasons that I've mentioned before. Well, I am going to spend a year with three different guns, and I'll tell you why. So welcome to episode number 461 of the Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. You know, I have been trying for a long time to figure out exactly which is going to be the one type of gun that I standardize on, and I still haven't got there yet. Still haven't figured it out. Most of you know I'm a big fan of the Glock 19. I've owned third-gen Glocks, fourth-gen Glocks, and now a fifth-gen Glock 19. But recently I've become very much a fan of the Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0 Compact, and that's been what I've been carrying a lot lately. So what do I mean by a year with three guns? Well, I am going to test three different guns for an entire year. So this is the ninth anniversary of the Handgun World Podcast. It started August 6, 2009. This show is being released August 6, 2018. Let me thank all of you for a terrific 9 years. Thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure. I can't tell you how much I appreciate having all of you listen to the show. And the number of listeners keeps growing even after 9 years. People have not gotten tired of listening to me. I can't believe that. I've had some people say they're never going to listen to me again. I've had some people send me comments saying that they're unsubscribing. Not very often. If you go to my iTunes review page, I've got like 330 something reviews, and maybe a handful of them said that they're going to stop listening to me for various reasons. But I feel like I'm actually getting a message out there that resonates with people, and I'm going to continue to do so. People like to hear about gear. They like to hear about guns. I've talked endlessly for years about training, and I certainly still always believe that training is more important than the tool, more important than the gun, more important than the equipment that you have. Learning how to use it. Yes, you have to have a good gun. You have to have good equipment, good holsters, good belts, good ammo, good magazines, good sights, and everything else. But all that's not going to help you too much if your shooting skills are just not very good. So in this quest to find out what is going to be the one gun that Bob Main settles on, let me tell you what I've eliminated. I don't think I'm ever going to settle on a 1911, and I'm not against 1911s. I don't hate 1911s, even though some people have claimed that I do. No, I don't hate 1911s. 1911s are just not for me. A lot of you listening to this show, you love 1911s. You carry 1911s. I've said many a time, if you're going to carry a 1911, marry the platform. What I mean by marry the platform is carry a 1911 and only a 1911. A large version and a small version. That's it. Because 1911s, you know, there's some training that's involved. If you're going to bet your life on that gun and you're going to be good with that gun, you're going to have to train yourself to make sure that you disengage the thumb safety and that you have a good grip so that you always engage the grip safety on a 1911 pistol. For me, I find that to be a hindrance, but personal preference. Now, What about a double action, single action gun, or traditional double action gun? Most of you know, a couple years back, I bought a SIG P229 Legion series. A SIG P229 Legion series. Fine gun, wonderful gun, terrific gun. Probably the best double action gun I've ever fired and ever had a chance to fire. I'm still not quite sure that that's going to be for me either because, and I've had a lot of chance to test that one, it's heavy, significantly heavier than a polymer frame gun. That first trigger pull, even though on the Legion series, is fantastic, and some of the new Berettas out there that are being put out by Langdon Tactical, I understand, are fantastic double action trigger pulls. It's just still something that I have to get used to. The first pull is different than all the rest of them. I've always been a big believer that the first shot is probably the most important shot that comes out of your gun in a self-defense situation. Even in competition, the first shot can be the most important. And for me, I had a hard time making that first shot where I want it to be with the double action trigger and then transitioning real quickly to the single action. It's been a difficult adjustment for me. But I'm not going to rule out a traditional double action, single action gun. So here's the deal. I am going to test these three guns over the next 1 year. So on August 6, 2019, I'm going to wrap up the entire 1 year test and I'm going to do a long episode with a long review on all three of them. Now, and then of course I'm going to answer which one I settled on as my one carry gun. You've all heard the old saying, beware of the man with one gun, because he just might know how to use it very well. Is that true? I think partially it is, yes. But I want to expand that a little bit. Beware of the person with one gun platform. In other words, one type of gun. Because he or she probably knows very well how to use it. In other words, if Glocks are for you, stick with Glocks, M&Ps, XDs, Ruger semi-automatics, striker-fired guns. If it's some of the new offerings out there, like the new SIG P320 or the new Beretta APX, lots of fine guns out there, the CZP10Cs, pick one and stick with one. Let me tell you what I have picked so far, the two that I've picked and why. And I'm going to tell you about the third that I want to pick. I'm going to test each gun for 4 months. 4 months. Each one, three guns, that's 12 months, that's a year. For 4 months at a time, I'm going to carry and shoot and practice and train only that gun. And maybe a smaller equivalent of the same gun, which I'll explain in a minute. Then for the next 4 months, I'm going to switch over to the next pistol. These are all handguns. And I'm going to carry, shoot, train, and compete with only that one and maybe a smaller equivalent. And then the final 4 months, same thing. So here's what I've picked. Not in this absolute order. Okay, and I haven't decided the order I'm going to start yet. By the time this podcast releases on August 6, 2018, I'll make my decision. An M&P 2.0 compact. M&P 2.0 compact 9mm with an Apex flat trigger short reset. And that's what's on my belt right now. It's what's on my hip. I've absolutely come to love this gun. So I'm going to test it and shoot it and carry it and compete with it and train with it only for 4 months. And I'm going to take a lot of notes. I'm going to log my round count. I'm going to write down notes as to what I've been liking about it, what I don't like, what I have to work on, what could be improved. I'm not going to make any modification to it other than what I've already done, which is put in the Apex trigger. I'm going to use the standard out-of-the-box sights. And by the way, that's another part of my test. I want to use as much out-of-the-box equipment as I can. I've already switched it over to an Apex trigger, so I'm going to stick with that because I don't want to go back to the factory trigger. The factory trigger of the M&P 2.0 compact is pretty good. But I'm not going to switch back to the factory trigger for this test purposes because I like the gun the way it is. And so that's how I'm going to test it. The next one is going to be my Glock 19 Gen 5. and I bought the Glock 19 Gen 5 with the factory installed Ameriglow sights with the orange front dot sight. So this is straight out of the box. This G19 Gen 5 is straight out of the box. It's the version with the Ameriglow sights. I'm not going to change the pistol at all. I'm going to carry it, shoot it, compete with it, train with it, completely stock. And again, logging my rounds, making notes as I do all of this. And in every podcast episode for the next year, I'm going to give you probably 5 or 10 minutes worth of material on this test, what I'm learning, what I'm observing, and what is actually happening as I do this test. So you'll be hearing about all of this along the way as I do it. The third gun, I don't know what I want to get yet. I'm going to buy it unless somebody wants to send me one for testing and evaluation for 4 months. I would certainly welcome that. That would be awesome. But I got a feeling I'm going to have to come out of pocket and buy it. That's okay. That's okay, because it's probably a gun I'm going to end up keeping anyway. But if somebody wants to send me one for testing and evaluation, hey, contact me, bob@handgunworld.com, bob@handgunworld.com, or leave me a voicemail, 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. So I don't know what the third gun's going to be yet. Here's where I need your help. How about you tell me? How about you, the listener, send me an email. Tell me what you want me to test. I like the compact size. I want to shoot a compact size tested. When I say compact size, typically it's got a 4-inch barrel or almost a 4-inch barrel, and it's got the same type of size and dimensions and grip size as a Glock 19 or an M&P 2.0 compact. That size of gun, it works very well for me. I like it. I don't particularly like long slide guns too much. Full-size duty guns, I really don't care too much for. I like the compact. And not so much the subcompact, but what they call the compact. Now, speaking of subcompacts, here's another reason why I've picked the G19 Gen 5 and the Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0 compact. Both of these guns have smaller versions that are nearly the same gun. The Smith & Wesson M&P 2.0 has the Shield, or Smith & Wesson has put out the Shield 2.0, which I have. So when I carry the Shield 2.0, it's not a lot different than carrying the M&P 2.0. And occasionally, I have to carry a small gun. So I'll include that in this test as well. But the Shield 2.0 is not much different than the M&P 2.0 compact, just smaller. Same with the G19 Gen 5. The Glock 19 Gen 5, the smaller version being the Glock 43. I'm not talking about the Glock 26 Gen 5. I'm talking about the Glock 43, because if I'm going to go small, I go to single stacks. I don't have any problem whatsoever carrying these compact guns and carrying them and concealing them. With the right belt, the right holster, which I'm going to be talking about soon, it's no problem for me. But I go to the single stacks if I have to go smaller. So a Glock 43 is nearly the equivalent of a Glock 19 Gen 5, just smaller. So the third gun, I want to pick a gun where I can get the smaller version in the same gun. Now, one thing I thought about is a Walther PPQ M2, because I can get a Walther PPS M2. And they're almost carbon copies of each other, just the PPS M2 is a little bit smaller. So that's something I've thought about, the third gun being a Walther PPQ M2 and a Walther PPS M2. You know, I've thought about a Beretta APX. The Beretta APX compact seems intriguing to me, but there's no smaller version. There's no little single stack version of the Beretta APX. I'd have to get a PX4 Storm, and then now I'm using a double action gun instead of a striker fired gun like the Beretta APX. But the Beretta APX is not out of the question. That's something I've been thinking about testing. Same thing with a CZ. I think it's the CZ 10C. correction, I think it's the CZP-10C. Well, that's been intriguing to me also. I had a chance to handle one of those at a gun store recently. That might be an option for the third gun. Again, no smaller version of that gun in single stack. I like to have a smaller version of the gun in single stack. So you tell me, give me some feedback, bob@handgunworld.com. Also, jump on Facebook. If you don't follow me on Facebook, please do. You can search Handgun World Podcast on Facebook, and or just search my name on Facebook. But I prefer to do this on my podcast page, Handgun World Podcast, and put your votes up there. Another one that I've been considering is, you know, some people say, well, Bob, how about the SIG P320? And then get the smaller version, which is the P365. And they're pretty close to the same. Not quite, but they're pretty close. That's not out of the question. You know, I've kind of picked on the P320s because they had the drop safe issues, and I've picked on the P365 because I love the concept of the gun, and the gun is designed well, but just too many reported problems right now, and I've always said I'm going to wait until the gun's been out about a year. So, you know, maybe by the time I get to that third four-month test, that'll be about a year or pretty close to a year since the gun has been out. So maybe that'll be a combination, a P320 compact and a SIG P365. Maybe that's the third combination of guns that I'm going to test. Sticking with the striker-fired type of guns, I think, is what... So if you've been saying, oh, great, look at this, Bob's going to be testing a 1911 again, no. I'm not going to be doing that. Now, all of these guns are going to be carried outside the waistband. Outside the waistband. Hey, how about that? There's a method of carry that nobody seems to talk about anymore. I'm not going to appendix carry these guns because I want to carry them all in a consistent manner. Because if I'm going to do this comparison, I want to have as many consistent things as possible. And so I'm going to carry them outside the waistband in a Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband. By the way, most of you know Concealment Solutions is a sponsor of this podcast. Visit them at concealmentsolutions.com, concealmentsolutions.com. Hey, there's a promo coming up in September and October for all Shooters Club members. I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm not going to give all the details on this episode, but on the September 1st episode, you'll get all the details. September and October, for anybody who's a member of the Shooters Club that Ben Branham and I produce, there's going to be a pretty cool Concealment Solutions promotion. And I think you are going to really like what we have in store for you. We're finalizing everything, but you're going to like it. So I'm going to carry all these in an outside-the-waistband Cobra holster, all Kydex by Concealment Solutions. I've got, I think, six or seven of these holsters for all different types of guns that I have, and they are fantastic. Even the small single stack guns, I carry them in a Concealment Solutions outside the waistband Cobra holster. And all of them are going to be carried with an extra magazine, and the extra magazine I'm going to carry in a horizontal position. That's my favorite way to carry an extra magazine. I either use a mag holder, horizontal mag carrier, or a Dale Fricke horizontal mag carrier, just because at the time when I was trying to find Glock 43 horizontal mag carriers, I don't think that mag holder had any, and also for the shield, I don't think they had any. They do now, I believe, but at the time they didn't. Maybe I'll pick up as many mag holder mag carriers as I can because I like those, and try to keep everything consistent. So maybe I'll pick up some for some of the other guns, like the smaller guns, the Shield and the G43. When I go to a competition match, I'm going to shoot the compact size. When I do a training class, when I take a training class, I'm going to shoot part of the training class with my compact size gun and part of the training class with the single stack version of the same gun. So that's going to be an interesting comparison as well. And I'm going to be testing things like, hey, how does it affect my shooting? How does the lower capacity affect my shooting? How does the shorter sight radius affect my shooting? How does the grip angle difference between Glock and M&P and some of the others affect shooting? I think that's way, way overblown. I think that's way overstated, the difference in grip angle. Many, many, many people shoot Glocks very, very, very well with the different type of grip angle than other guns out there. But I'm going to be paying attention to that. I'm going to be paying attention to the magazines, how well they function, how well they do. I'll be making notes of that. Performing reloads, I'm going to be analyzing how easy or how difficult it is to perform a reload to get more ammo into the gun. I'm going to be analyzing the ability to clear malfunctions. I'm going to be analyzing the stock sights. Again, I'm going to use the stock sights on these guns. You know, one of the first things people change out on most polymer guns, especially Glocks and M&Ps, they change out the sights. I think the sights on the M&Ps are just fine. I think the three-dot white sights are fine. The only thing is they're not night sights out of the box. So that's a challenge. But you know what? I'm going to shoot some low-light training classes in competition as well. And I'm going to shoot the low-light matches without night sights and see how it works. I want to perform a test for the everyday person that goes to a gun shop, buys a gun, takes it out of the box, and goes out and shoots it right away and carries that. So many people, that's what they do. You know, folks, I am not ex-military or ex-law enforcement or gunsmith or anything like that. So I'm just an everyday guy. I'm a businessman, a family man, and that's my full-time life. I'm not an industry insider. I do some training classes on the side. Sometimes I teach with Ben Branham. Yes, I don't even teach the Texas license to carry class anymore. I'm just a regular dude. So I want to do what regular people do. And a lot of them, what do? They go to the gun shop, they select the gun, they buy it, they usually don't make any modifications to it at all, and they shoot it, just the way it is, out of the box. Some people don't have the budget to make modifications. Some of them listen to what I say, and they give their gun a 1,000-round trigger job before they do any modifications, and I want to change that to 2,000. Give your gun a 2,000-round trigger job. I did a whole podcast on that. If you go to my website and search 1,000-round trigger job, you'll find it. But basically, it means shoot your gun 1,000 rounds before you do anything to it. Why? You'll know what to do to it. You'll know what works for you, what kind of modifications to make after you've shot 1,000 rounds. Don't do like I did. I wasted a lot of money, folks, and a lot of time. Immediately making modifications to a gun before I even shot it very much. Waste of time. Waste of time. Shoot 1,000, preferably 2,000 rounds, especially if you buy a 9mm gun. 1,000 rounds of 9mm doesn't cost all that much these days. Well worth it. Well worth it. Much better than wasting your money on modifications that you may or may not need. So again, I'll be shooting these guns in their stock configuration out of the box. The most common method that everyday people use. Now, if I decide, hey, after testing this gun and shooting this gun and training with this gun for 4 months, you know, hey, I need to make some modifications, I will tell you, I'll tell you, the listener, what I'm thinking of doing, what kind of modifications, and why. And why. And this is going to be after shooting it for 4 months and carrying it. And I'll be analyzing how it carries as well, and how modifications might affect its ability to be carried, and how it affects the draw, everything. Now, in that 4 month period when I test each gun, my goal is 1,000 to 2,000 round trigger job for each one that I test during that 4 month time frame. So I got a lot of shooting to do, but hey, you know what? That's the fun. That's the fun. I plan on taking some more classes with KR Training, with Carl Wren at KR Training up near the Austin area. I want to do a couple more of those, two or three more of those over the next year. And I got some other classes in mind that I'm thinking of taking. One of them I want to repeat. One of them is one that I have not taken that I've always wanted to take. So I'll let you know about those. So I'm probably going to be taking between four and five training classes in the next year. And I'm going to do a lot more competing at local IDPA and local AASA matches and competing with these guns as well. Probably not going to do a whole lot of public range shooting. I will occasionally, just to test a couple things, test some features and stuff like that. But most of it is going to be out there in a training class or doing some competition shooting. So now would be a good time for the first break. And really, it's not going to be a break. It's going to be a voicemail that has come in from a listener that I want to play for you right now and then talk about it.
Hey, Bob. Steven from Northeast Georgia. I am actually a couple of hundred episodes behind. I decided to go back and listen to the oldest ones I could, and I get about two a week. But the reason I'm calling is I wanted to slightly disagree with something that's come up a couple times on the older shows, where you've had a guest on there who makes negative remarks about light on a weapon. So I'm concerned about something going bump in the night, so I've been thinking about a home defense shotgun and a home defense handgun, something like that. So I started looking at YouTube, and Mossberg actually had a Shorefire rep on there doing a weapon light demo, and you can use a light to illuminate an area without pointing your gun at a family member or somebody inadvertently. I guess a rifle-type gun shoots a tight beam a far distance, and a handgun-type light shoots a wider beam over a shorter distance, and it lights up a larger area. So I actually went around my house when no one was home and simulated walking around without covering people in their beds or, you know, without pointing the gun in unsafe directions. I did it with a handgun and a shotgun. And I think it would be possible with practice and training to safely use a weapon light in situations, because you can illuminate a big area without directly pointing the gun at leaving the ready position without pointing the gun in unsafe directions. Anyway, I just thought you would like to think about that and hear your comments. I'm not...
Well, Stephen, that's a good call. It's a good subject you bring up, and thanks for calling it in. There is a lot of argument about weapons-mounted lights. And if you train properly with a weapons-mounted light and you get some good quality instruction, yeah, it's possible to make it work in a safe manner. Yes, you can go ahead and illuminate your target and not be pointing your muzzle at the target. You know, that's a big knock on weapons-mounted lights. People say that, but I think a lot of people say that, but they don't really, I think they're just maybe repeating what it is that they hear from other people and opinions. I am not a huge fan of a weapon-mounted light simply because it just makes the firearm more bulky for me to carry. And I like to carry the smaller guns, the compact guns. And sometimes when I put a weapon-mounted light on a compact gun, the light kind of sticks out past where the barrel ends and where the slide ends. And even though that's not typically a problem, I just don't like it. Then I have to have special holsters made and things like that. I know it takes longer to draw my flashlight. I know that. I've taken low light classes where I have to draw my handheld flashlight as well, and I'm shooting my pistol one-handed. There are techniques that you can use to get some good stability shooting one-handed. You should be always practicing shooting one hand with both hands anyway. That's a skill that you should develop. So I am not personally going to probably carry a weapon-mounted light, especially for this one-year test coming up, but I always have my flashlight on me. But Stephen, you bring up a good point. And, you know, yeah, I've had people on the show in the past, and thank you for listening to my older shows, a couple hundred episodes back. Wow. Yeah, this is the 461st episode, 461 episodes, and this is coming out on the 9th anniversary of my podcast, August 6, 2009. It's hard for me to even remember what I said a couple hundred episodes ago unless I go back and listen to them. Again, when you've done as many as I have, it's just nearly impossible to remember some of the things that you've said. But in the future, if you listen to an older episode and you want to ask me about it, tell me which episode it was you're listening to. Give me the episode number, and I'll go back and I'll listen to it myself, and then I'll make some comments, especially if there's something specific that somebody said or that I said on that episode. I want to hear about it. Tell me what it is. And then I'll go back and I'll listen to it and then bring it up on a show right now. Stephen, thanks for calling in. Let's take the next voicemail.
Hi, Bob. My name's Joe. I'm calling from Illinois. Reason I'm calling. Couple of things you mentioned that our firearm is a life insurance policy. I think a better word for it would be a life assurance policy, but semantics. About you call yourself a practical guy, and I consider myself a very practical guy, so I'm going to run down a couple things about Glocks. Okay, I used to have 50 different handguns and rifles. Okay, at a certain point in time, I said, I don't need any more guns. I'm going to start working on the optics and the sighting system, stuff like that. And in doing that, it just seemed more practical to get rid of some guns. Now I'm down to, three handguns, basically, all Glocks, Glock 17 long, Gen 1, Glock 19, Suarez enhanced grip and stuff like that, and a Glock 26. That's the other 9mm. So the reason I call myself a very practical guy, with three Glocks and a bag of parts, I can keep these things running forever. I'm an advanced Glock armorer, so you know what I mean? It's the best to have the same round on three different firearms. Full-size, mid-size, and compact is the best of all worlds. On the RMR, I got my RMR from Suarez basically right when they first came out about 6 years ago, I think, 6-7 years ago. And the I just listened to a rebroadcast of one of Glock's, one of Suarez's trainers that did the class that I took. But way back then, it was only a one-day class. But if a couple things you may not know. Because the Trijicon is so rugged, you can basically use it as a charging handle for your Glock. It makes it a lot more convenient than trying to grab the slide. The other thing is, what you may not know about, and I think this is specific to Glocks only, in a Type 3 malfunction where you have a double feed, you have to grab the magazine, yank it, or lock the slide back, grab the magazine, and yank it out. Well, with the Glock, you don't really have to do that. If you push the magazine release and then, you know, put the base of your hand over your charging handle and charge it, that mag just falls free. What else? I enjoyed the show on the Ruger LCR. I don't know how they make a revolver.
Thank you, Joe. There's a second part to his voicemail that I'm going to play for you again in this episode a little later. But let me address some things that he just said. You know, especially shrinking down the size of the number of guns. You know, he said he had like 50 and now he's got 3. See, that's kind of what I'm doing too. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I can never have enough guns. I can. I can have enough guns. Matter of fact, I already have enough guns. In fact, because of good budgeting and staying out of debt and living well and working hard and earning a nice income and following Dave Ramsey's financial peace program, I'm in a position where I can go out and buy any gun I want and pay cash. Of course, I'm not trying to brag here, folks. I'm not trying to brag. I'm a humble guy. I'm just telling you the truth. And anybody can achieve that as long as you pay off all your debts and stay debt-free. And things like that, you can do things like this. I could go buy any gun I want. If I want to go drop $3,000 on a Wilson Combat or a Nighthawk 1911, I can. It would not be a very wise expenditure of my money, in my opinion. But I could go do it tomorrow morning if that's what I wanted to do. I'm not planning on doing that. I want to invest in myself more. I want to do this one-year test, figure out which is the one-gun system that's going to work for me, and just stay with it and buy a lot of parts and accessories. Joe brings up a good point. That's one great advantage of Glock pistols, is you can buy all kinds of parts and keep those Glocks running for the rest of your lifetime, and then your kids can run them for their lifetime, and your grandkids can run them for their lifetime. That's what's great about Glocks, and there are hardly any other pistols out there except for maybe a 1911 where you can do that. It's not real easy to get spare parts for M&Ps and for Rugers and for Springfields and for CZs and all the other brands that are out there, and the SIGs and things like that. They're just not as readily available and easy to find and easy to get a hold of. And of course, Joe says he's a Glock armorer, so that helps him out as well. So I applaud you, Joe. Way to go. That's pretty good. As far as using the Trijicon RMR as a charging handle, yeah, those red dots, they are very rugged. Trijicon RMRs are probably still the most rugged red dot sight out there. There are other good ones, but in terms of durability, they probably are. I tried doing that, using it as a charging handle. The thing I don't like about that, I get the glass dirty pretty easily. I get my fingers all over that, and I got all kinds of fingerprints and smudges all over the glass, and then it messes things up for me. So I don't do that anymore. You could do that if you wanted to. Also, you can rack the slide off of things using the Trijicon RMR if you want. But I don't do that, but Joe brings up a good point. So there you go. He's got another voicemail. Let's listen.
Yeah, hi, Bob. I wasn't aware that I had a time limit there, so I got cut off. The Ruger LCR, I was surprised to see they made it in 9mm. And since I'm basically going for a limited number of ammo, okay, in ammo sizes, I've chosen 9mm. Let's see, what else was there? Condolences on your wife. I was listening to an older episode where you spoke about her. I'm really sorry. You mentioned a flashlight in one of the recent episodes I listened to. And the button on the back is you go from a full light, hit it again, to a flash, or a strobe, I should say. What you might want to check out is a Terrell, it's called a Terrellux, Terrellux, TT5. Okay, it has two different buttons on the back. One that brings the round one that goes from bright to mid to low, and then it's got a separate moon shape button on the back where it goes straight to strobe. And that makes it a lot more convenient. And another thing you might want to think about in using a flashlight, because I've got different flashlights, you know, between the fingers, the thin one, whoever makes that one, the thin center. But whenever you're holding a flashlight in your left hand or you have one on your firearm and you're looking around in the dark, you're always muzzling someone. If you finally get someone in the light, you're muzzling them. Okay, and I don't find that appropriate for what I want to do. So there's a method of holding your flashlight up by your chin in your weak hand, and then you'd be shooting one-handed, but at least you wouldn't be muzzling anybody. That's pretty much it, Bob. Thanks for your time. I am going to call you back for one more because the next one, I don't want you to play it. I don't want you to even talk about it on the air because it's a class I'm working up. And, you know, when somebody gets an idea of a class, it goes all over the country, and somebody will start doing it before I do. And I have to do some more work in my Bible before I can come out with this class. So thanks, Bob. Bye.
Okay, Joe, thanks for this voicemail. Yes, folks, there's a three-minute time limit when you call in a voicemail. So if you have more to say, you'll have to call in a second time. Hey, Joe, there is a technique that you can use, as my previous caller mentioned, where you will not be muzzling the person. You know, weapons-mounted lights give off enough peripheral light where you can see a person's hands. You know, you can see what's on their waistband, their hands, and things like that. But you're not pointing the gun straight at them. And it only takes about a half a second to bring the gun up on the threat and get the sights aligned and things. You know, half a second maybe. So if you practice and train and take a class on using a weapons-mounted light, you'll find that you're not always going to be muzzling people with that light. Again, not my preferred type of flashlight to use. I'm like you. I like to have a handheld flashlight that I have in my left hand because I'm a right-handed shooter. But check into that. Do some research, and you'll find out what I'm talking about. But even with the muzzle depressed a little bit and the hot spot of the beam coming out of that light, it gives off enough peripheral light without muzzling the target so you can see what's going on. I have learned in taking low light classes that sometimes I don't want to have that full beam of light pointing straight ahead in front of my gun. Yeah, if you take a good low light class or participate in a low light match, you'll see that sometimes all you want is peripheral ambient light, especially if you're using good techniques of moving around in the dark as well. So check into that. And Joe brings up a good point, though, also about standardizing on calibers. This test I'm doing, they're all going to be 9mm guns, and that's about all I use these days are 9mm guns. Standardizing caliber has a great benefit. I don't care what you standardize on, 45, 40, 9mm, whatever. Not too many people standardize on 380 or 357 SIG, but whatever you decide to standardize on, fine. You can take advantage of bulk ammo purchases and good prices buying both practice ammo and concealed carry ammo in bulk and save a lot of money doing that. And if you're a reloader, I would assume if you have mostly one caliber or only one caliber to worry about, would that not make your reloading a little bit easier as well and a little bit more effective? I don't know, just a thought. I'm not a reloader of ammunition, but for those of you who are reloaders out there, tell me about that. Tell me if my theory is correct or if I'm wrong. 210-646-1727 is the voicemail. I love getting these messages, and many thanks to all of you who support my show. Just to let you know, Ben Branham and I have put some new videos on the Shooters Club, and more are going to be posting August 1st, which is before you hear this podcast. So a lot of good videos on there, over 70 instructional videos. We don't just advertise on the Shooters Club podcast. Matter of fact, it's a paid membership site, so there's no advertising. It's all training and information exclusively. Neither myself nor Ben put these on our podcasts. It's pretty good stuff. You can support us for only $8 a month or $75 a year. And again, September and October, you are going to have a chance to participate in a really cool promotion through Concealment Solutions. But you got to be a Shooters Club member to do that. And thank you to a lot of you who make purchases on my Amazon store. If you're going to shop on Amazon, just go to handgunworld.com first and then click my Amazon store. Every time you do that, I get a little bit of credit from Amazon when you purchase something, and I appreciate that very much. Okay, normally in every episode, I spend some time talking about modern survivalism and life skills and, you know, financial stuff and things like that. Before I get into all that, I want to tell you about an observation I made recently. I just got back recently from a 12-day trip out to the Philippines to see my fiance, and it was good to go out there and see her again, but I was out there during rainy season. July and August is the rainy season in the Philippines, and we got hit by a typhoon. I think it was Typhoon Josie. Man, I haven't seen so much rain since Hurricane Harvey hit South Texas. Unbelievable. Typhoons really suck. And lots of places were flooded for several days in the Philippines, but we still made the best of it, and we had a good time. An observation I wanted to make and tell you about, in the Philippines, even though there's no Second Amendment right, there are armed guards in a lot of public places, on public streets, malls, banks, money change areas, things like that. So although I did not have a Second Amendment right, at least the Philippine government and Philippine law enforcement makes an effort, at least they make an effort to try to give me some protection and all the citizens there some protection. You know, in the United States, we don't do that. In the United States, if they don't allow you to carry in an area, if they don't allow you to carry in a city or a state or whatever, they also don't, the government doesn't go through any effort to protect you either. They just say, too bad, you're on your own and you can't protect yourself. That sucks. So at least the Philippines is trying anyway. Really, though, the real solution is, come on, just let your citizens carry, like we have here in America, Second Amendment, well, at least in most states and in most cities, not everywhere. Hopefully one day, everywhere, that will. The other thing I want to say is our immigration system. Boy, does it suck. You know, it's hard for me to get her over here. It's like an 8 to 9 month complicated process. And you know why? I'm doing it legally. I'm legally applying. I have applied for a legal fiancé visa for her to come here. Well, as much as I like President Trump, I'm going to tell you, President Trump, I know he and his administration and Congress, they're cracking down on illegal immigration. That's good. But they have not improved the legal immigration. Matter of fact, it's worse. It used to be easier to legally bring someone here from another country. Now it's harder. What sense is that? What? Come on. Come on, President Trump, Congress. What's the sense in that? I'm trying to do things legally and the right way. I should be given preference. It should be easier for me to do it legally. How about, why don't we reward the people trying to do it the correct way and at the same time crack down on all of the illegal immigration? I don't like that. That kind of sucks, but it is what it is, and I'm dealing with it the best I can, and I've hired a good immigration lawyer to help me that's used to doing this stuff, worth every dollar that I had to pay him, because I would have already cost myself some time and headache if I didn't have him helping me. And again, these are the kinds of things that you can do and you can afford when you work hard, get debt-free, work extra jobs to make extra money, pay down debt, save. Oh, man, all kinds of great opportunities. Money doesn't buy you happiness, folks. I'm a Christian man, all right? Jesus Christ is my Lord and my Savior. I serve him every day. The Bible says money is the root of all evil. It's the root of all evil. It doesn't mean that having money is evil. It just means that money is the root of all evil, it can be the cause of evil. But money is not my God. Money is just a tool to me. I love people and use money instead of loving money and using people. Unfortunately, there are too many people who love money and use people. I love people and I use money. And yeah, one of the really cool things that Dave Ramsey says is once you pay off your debt and you're saving and you're investing and then you start, you know, living on a written budget and things like that, you find that you got extra money that you didn't have before and you can be more generous. And so I like to try to be more generous and make some more donations to charitable organizations and to help people that I really believe need the help. I use the Every Dollar app. And again, Dave Ramsey does not sponsor this program or anything. I'm just a successful, loyal follower of his program, and it's working. And I feel the obligation when there's something that's working for me, whether it's for guns or anything else, I tell you about it. I tell you about it because my ultimate service on this podcast is to you, the listener. You're the ones that I serve on this podcast. So it's my obligation to give you value and give you things that will help you, and we do this all together. I use the Every Dollar app. One word, Every Dollar, and I keep that's how I keep my written budget. What's really cool is that it's on my iPhone. So every time I spend money, I put it into my budget. I set the budget on the first of every month. How much am I going to spend on what? Sometimes I'm over budget, sometimes I'm under budget. It's like every month I have to kind of recommit and readjust, and that's what's really good. Most of the time, I have more money left at the end of the month. Unlike the opposite, some people have too much month at the end of the money. Lately, that's not been my issue. And by the way, my income's been down a little bit lately. As you know, I'm in sales, and a large portion of my income is based on the commissions from my sales. Well, my sales have been down lately. The last 6 or 7 months, they've been down. So my income's been down, but my leftover money has not been down because I'm living by a budget. So there's a couple of observations I wanted to share with you, not really gun-related. I guess the security in the Philippines, that's gun-related. But as far as everything else, I just kind of wanted to throw that out there, get your opinion on it. If you got some comments on this segment as well, love to hear them. Once again, my voicemail number, 210-646-1727. So the next episode is going to come out September 1st. And then starting on September 1st, I'm going to get back on the 1st and 15th schedule. The reason I didn't do the 1st and 15th in July is because I wanted to do this special 9th anniversary of my show on the 9th anniversary of my show, which is August 6th. So it kind of fell right into the middle of my schedule. Again, September 1, and then I'll do September 1, September 15th, October 1, October 15th, and so on and so forth, so you know when to expect new episodes coming out. Please remember to check out my YouTube channel and also Bob's Bullet Points on YouTube. Every once in a while, I put out a 5 or 6 minute video, and I keep it down to just 5 or 6 minutes. I don't drone on and on for 25, 30 minutes, and those are kind of boring sometimes, in my opinion. 5 or 6 minutes, I pick one topic. It's a hard-hitting topic. I put out the information and let you listen to it on YouTube. Bob's Bullet Points, if you search that on YouTube, you'll find it. Or if you just search Handgun World on YouTube, you'll find my channel. Would love to have you watching over there and also subscribing. That's all, folks. Many thanks again for a real good 9 years. And here's to some more months and years in the future. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. And remember, the loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Read your Bible every day and shoot straight and shoot safe. I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.